From the land grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the 8th day of September 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom at TotalFarmMarketing.com. We'll hear from Ed Usson, agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota. And along the way, I'll update you on the administration's policies related to beef and beef imports and how some producers, ranchers, are impacted by that and their feelings as they look towards Washington, D.C. And then we'll turn our attention as well to the weather forecast. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And we'll do that all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at $5.33.5, down 3.25 cents. March at $5.49, 3.25 lower. And the May contract also down 3.25, is settled at $5.56.5. November new crop soybeans, $13.16.25, up 6.5 cents. January, $13.32, 7 higher. And the March up 8.25 cents at $13.38.5 for the soybeans. Bean meal down $4.90 at $3.43.30. The bean oil at $70.22, $1.33 higher. Wheat futures soft red in the December at $7.47, a gain of 13 cents. The hard red at $8.19 in December at $16.75 higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago $4.75 higher. Feeders up $5.30 and lean hogs $1.95 higher. Crude oil at $92.92 a barrel, up $1.45. Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing now joins us to take a look at what's happened after the 3-day weekend, Labor Day. Hey, Naomi, thanks for being with us. Hope you had a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a nice work-at-home weekend. Got a lot of stuff done.
Me too. I love working in the yard sometimes, and it was really good. Weather was great over the weekend. And given it was a 3-day weekend, not much changed, frankly, in Chicago. Tell me about the trade for today.
Yeah, some quiet two-sided trade action for corn and soybeans. Wheat up stronger on the overnight and was able to finish the day with some double-digit gains, as still more concerns about what's happening with the Black Sea region. But one thing to kind of take note of is that corn futures today closed below both the 5- and 10-day moving averages. So they are needing some fresh bullish news soon, or we might see a simple pullback on corn prices, similar to what wheat did a couple weeks ago. The beans just continue to teeter-totter on the sideways little shuffle here, waiting for some fresh news as well. And we probably don't get much for fresh news until Friday's WASDE report.
What are the expectations there?
Well, we are seeing some pre-report estimates of lower ending stocks, lower yield numbers. It looks like one pre-report estimate for yield for corn is coming out near like the 176 half area. For soybean yield, maybe real close to the last USDA number, potentially a little bit smaller. The question, though, is going to be, is that information already priced into the market? Because ever since we had the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, grain prices had surged higher, expecting lower production. So is the USDA going to just echo what we already have been trading in? Or are they going to give us anything over the top bullish? Will they do something where they just do a modest reduction and don't give us any new bullish information like we're hoping for? So just something to be aware of, you know, would be, you know, a lot of people thinking we're going to see $6 corn. And it could happen, but it's going to take some even lower yield numbers from the USDA. In my opinion, yield would have to come in near 175 in order for corn to take that next leg higher in the short term. Again, otherwise we might see a pullback. D's corn today finishing 533.5, down 3.25. If the market does a simple 50% correction from the 3-week rally we had, that takes D's corn 30 cents lower, down near the $5 area. So there is still some price value to protect, and just be ready for any scenario to unfold as this week goes on.
Have you heard any very, very early yields from producers who have been in the fields?
Near St. Joe, Missouri, I heard a producer tell me it was just average, like on a five-year average. Definitely some parts of his field that were below expectations, some a little bit surprising. A farmer in northwest Iowa who was doing silage told me that it was coming in at 225. Last year it was running near 250 when you do the appraisal for yield adjustment there. So not as good as last year, but definitely not terrible. So that's, again, part of that yield reduction that maybe we're already seeing and expecting. And the question is it going to be priced into the market already or not?
Not as good as last year, when it was the best year we've ever had. It's an interesting function.
Exactly.
So we'll see how, as more producers get into the field through the month of September, how things turn and what, of course, USDA will have to say. This will be their first crop production report that includes some on-the-ground numbers, meaning they were in the fields taking counts as of September the 1st. And that should be give us a better idea, potentially, particularly as far along as I think this crop might be at this point. What else are you watching in the marketplace at this time, whether that be in the livestock, the outside markets, or if you want to return to the Black Sea area and what's happening there?
Yeah, so two things keeping an eye on. So the cattle prices for live cattle feeder and feeder cattle have been trading in a very cautious 2-week sideways trading pattern. But today, we're able to break through some short-term resistance. And we saw technical buying with live cattle and feeder cattle gaining some ground today. Again, mostly technical buying there. We're waiting for some confirmation of additional news as far as where cash would trade this week. But box beef values today were a little bit stronger, so that was supportive. And then over in the crude oil complex, of course, the continued escalation in the Middle East, keeping crude oil prices a little bit higher. Nearby October crude oil trading near 92.5, up about a buck. So we're not seeing any relief there yet. So again, keep an eye on Middle East prices, keep an eye on Middle East war, crude oil prices. And then we have some just economic news coming out this week with consumer price index. So we'll be keeping an eye on inflation numbers as well.
Hey, thanks much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Now, Thursday of this week, Indicator, the Illinois Soybean Association will be putting on a field day. The important part for us here on campus is that there will be two agricultural professors from crop sciences there to talk about soybeans and corn. And one of them will talk about fertility. That's John Jones. The other about entomology. That would be Nick Sider. You can join them online. You can join them in the field there. It's a day-long event. Go to the Illinois Soybean Association and check out their field day in Decatur. If you can't find it, visit our website and scroll down to the calendar. There is a link inside that Field Crop Day on Thursday of this week. Of course, I'll be there and report back to you from that field day as well on Thursday. One quick ag news item for the day. Last Friday, President Trump, surrounded by beef producers in the Oval Office, said of the already announced 90-day suspension of tariffs on some 300,000 metric tons of imported beef from countries including Brazil and Argentina, that they, the beef producers, all wanted it and lower prices. This is actually the second fall in a row the president has managed to make beef producers unhappy by further opening the U.S. market to foreign beef in hopes of lowering consumer prices.
You can't drive consumer price down while inspiring the producers to stay in business. It just doesn't work that way.
That's John O'Day from a Facebook post he made this morning. He's a beef producer in southwestern Nebraska and has about 2,000 head of cattle on his property right now. He's vocal on Facebook and has some pretty strong thoughts about the administration's plans to grow the cattle industry in the United States. He gave me permission to share his thoughts.
I had a good friend of mine sent me a simple yet profound message. He said, "What kind of person decides to enter into a business or expand a business in hopes that they can drive their income down. That's essentially what the government is saying. You're going to get into the cow business so you can make less money. We want to expand your business so you can make less money.
The administration says the imported beef is to be sold at a 25% discount compared to market prices. There aren't any details on how that's supposed to happen. However, this all comes after another Oval Office meeting. It took place with one of the co-owners of JBS, the world's largest meatpacker. A subsidiary of that company, Pilgrim's Pride, was reportedly the largest donor to President Trump's second inauguration. The ranchers were in the Oval Office to watch the president sign a series of executive orders aimed at placating their concerns over the beef imports. Those orders, among other things, aim to reduce the market dominance of the four largest meat processors, JBS is an example, by allowing farmers and ranchers to process, package, and sell their meat directly to consumers across state lines. Ed Usset, agricultural economist at University of Minnesota, and with Extension now joins us. Hi, Ed. Thank you for taking some time with us. Hope you had a great Labor Day weekend.
I did, and thank you for having me back.
I wonder, after this three-day weekend, whether things have changed. I doubt it. Maybe you could tell me. Let's start with the crop other than spring wheat to the north, probably of you even for the most part, whether things have really changed in wheat at this point?
You know, the spring wheat crop is essentially, you know, we're well into harvest now. It's in the wrap-up phase, and it'll be a decent crop in Minnesota. North Dakota had some challenges. Here's my thought on wheat, though, Todd. I've got one. I'm going back 4 years ago when the Russia-Ukraine war first broke out, and the wheat market really took off at that time. And I recall, the market soaring, spring wheat prices, soft wheat prices, they're all moving high. And I have a discussion with one of the biggest exporters of wheat, big grain co-op based up here in the U.S. And he said, he's amazed at the rally in the market and that. He says, the funny thing is, though, we haven't sold any more wheat. I mean, it's like when they have problems in Russia and Ukraine, they're not moving wheat. And the idea, of course, is the people, the countries that would buy wheat from those countries got to come somewhere else. And that's us or Canada. And he's just like, you know, we just really don't have any export sales to talk about that are extraordinary or new. And I feel like the same thing's happening now. We're getting a hell of a run-up. A lot of anticipation of new business coming our way. And yet here, I'll look at the WASD report. I wonder if they even change wheat exports. We'll look. That's my thought on wheat.
We'll find out Friday. Just to follow up, it appears to me, and I saw the data on this just this morning, that the United States wheat from the exportable places out of the Gulf in particular is still higher priced than almost everywhere else across the planet.
If we want to sustain the higher price, we got to start selling something. So that's my thought on wheat.
Well, if you want to sustain the higher price, you have to start selling somewhere. I want to talk about this rally that we have had in soybeans and corn both. Heading into harvest season, what are your thoughts?
Well, my first thought is a confessional to Todd. I believe the last time we talked was the first week in August. And I had just completed the week before three different forays into different parts of Minnesota. And my goodness, we had a beautiful crop. And I believe my bold prediction is that we would revisit the June lows come harvest, which was another 20, 30 cents lower in corn and maybe 40 or 50 cents lower in soybeans. And Todd, a man is rarely that wrong.
Well, it's not harvest yet.
rarely that wrong. And we had an incredible August. I mean, I think we talked just about on the lows for August. But I did a little analysis. It'll show up in my farm futures column that'll come out soon, if not out already. I took a look at, we had from the start of August to the end of August, the December corn futures were up almost 14%. That was the biggest August rise I can find in the last 37 years. Now, I did find three other years similar, 2003, 2011, 2022, the December contracts. And all I did is I said, okay, we've had a huge rise in August. Let's take it to the end of November, into harvest, all the way through harvest for corn. What did the December contract do in those 3 years? In 2003, it went a nickel higher. I mean, basically unchanged. We didn't, the rally didn't keep going. 2011, the market set back $1.30 a bushel. Now, I will say in 2011, we started from a very high level. We were over $7 a bushel in the December contract. And then 4 years ago, the December 22 contract, 10% rise in the month of August, 4 cents higher by the end of November. So it's a small sample size, but I guess I'm leaning towards, okay, we're going to settle in and we're going to work into harvest here. And I'm not, you know, if you're thinking $7 corn, $8 corn, you know, take a deep breath. Okay. Take a deep breath. I don't know if that's going to happen. Soybeans. I did the same thing on November soybeans. Now, the November contract did not rise more than 10% in August. It was only up 8%. But that was the fifth best year in the last 37 years. So I looked at four other years, 2000, 2003, 2004, 2013. Three of those years, 2000, 2004, 2013, after that big August run-up, it settled back by the end of October, anywhere from 50 cents to $1.10. Okay. Again, like 2013 started from a very high level. The one exception here, and it's a year I remember well, 2003, when we had a big August increase, and then by the end of October, we were up another $2. 2003 was an incredible year. I don't think many people know this, Todd, but that was, by my calculation, if you look at the U.S. yield versus trend in 2003, it's the fifth worst year for U.S. soybean yields since in the last 75 years. The fifth, and but maybe yourself and maybe some of your listeners are saying, wait a second, 2003 was not a drought year. Well, we always measure droughts by what it did to the corn market. And of course, corn that year got through the critical development stages and ended up fine. It was sort of a trend line yield, maybe a touch below, but it hurt the corn market, the soybean market, because it quit raining in August. So it's a small sample size, but and I don't think we're 2003. I don't believe we're going to fall off on the yields that bad. So take a deep breath and enjoy this rally. Don't hold out for a lot higher in the next couple months.
I have been of a mind that part of this rally has been the weather. But the bulk of the rally has been the energy sector, the wars that are taking place in the Middle East and the Ukraine and Russia.
I think so.
That puts us at 2022. Plus, you have the biofuels expansion, RFS, particularly for soybean oil. And I'm wondering how you put those into context.
Well, it's not analogous to those years I just talked about. And that's always the challenge. Every year is a little bit different. Every year has its own story. So that's why grain marketing is not easy.
Well, I was looking for an answer, but let's go with grain markets not easy. Anything else before I let you go?
Oh, boy. No. I'm looking at the Minnesota crops. I'm Boy, a month ago, I just thought we had a shot at setting records in corn and soybean yields again, as we did last year. But I've pared back those thoughts quite a bit.
Thank you much, Ed.
Okay. Thank you, Todd.
You're so welcome. That's Ed Ussett. He's an agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota and with Extension. You, by the way, are listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLANG.org. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Let's take a look at the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. We'll stay in the United States today. Don Day is here with day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Finally, some relief from the heat, at least in my part of the world. What can you tell me about the growing regions in the United States? Start in the Southwest, please.
Well, the Southwest is going to start to see some shower and thunderstorm activity is spreading and getting a little bit more eastward, along with very modest heat relief. We still have a lot of high pressure in the central United States, so there's nothing really strong coming out of the northwest United States that have a big drop in temperature. But the way the high pressure pattern is working in the southern U.S. and low pressure in the Pacific Northwest is helping to bring subtropical moisture north and eastward, and that's going to be draping slightly cooler temperatures and showers and thunderstorms over parts of the central and the south here over the next few days.
In the Corn Belt, will that rainfall come our way as well, and the cooler temperatures?
Yes and yes. Over the next week, I do see some cooler temperatures. Again, not dramatically cooler, but enough to take the edge off. And over the next 7 days, shower and thunderstorm activity, especially in the western central Corn Belt, even parts of the eastern Corn Belt. And we're even going to start to see some showers and thunderstorms over some areas that haven't had that in a while, like Oklahoma, Texas, Arkansas, Kansas, and into Missouri.
Relief for them. How badly is that rainfall needed?
Well, there's been quite a stretch where there hasn't been any significant precipitation in those areas I just mentioned. But the precipitation that's been around in July and into the month of August has been favoring more of the northern I-80 corridor areas, and those areas further to the south really could use it.
Anything else of interest that you've been watching?
Well, I think we continue to see the Pacific Ocean churn out one hurricane and tropical storm after another. Now, a lot of folks might think, well, that's out of sight, out of mind. That's too far away. Well, it really isn't. We're seeing some of that subtropical moisture, like here in the next week or so, getting into the U.S., and I think there's more of it to come as we go into the rest of the month and into October.
Hey, thanks much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather. He's in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and helped us to wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media, online on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.